The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
Welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nations Comic Book Chronicles. I am your host, Tim D-O-double-G. Tonight I'm joined by at PCN underscore dirt on Twitter.
Hi, everybody. Great to be here.
Also have here tonight at agent underscore 70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
And last but not least, we have at Roddy Cat on Twitter. I want to encourage everyone to go to our website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Follow the Twitter account at theclicknation. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/theclicknation. Add us to your circles on Google Plus. Just search for The Click Nation. Subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Give us 5-star reviews on iTunes. Give us the thumbs up on Stitcher. Share us. Use the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles on your favorite social media websites. We are a part of the Comic Related Podcasting Network and the Cold Slither Podcast Network. Go to their respective websites, comicrelated.com and coldslitherpodcast.com. And if you ever have any feedback you want to have read on a future show, send that on over to theclicknation@gmail.com. So with that out the way, we're going to dive into the comic book news of the week. First up, we'll have the cinematic news. Let's see, Kevin Conroy and Weird Al Yankovic join Batman vs. Robin animated movie.
Ooh.
Which there was a trailer released this week for, I believe, or end of last week.
Yeah, I think it was end of last week.
Looked pretty good. I still haven't watched the previous movie, with Son of Batman. Though I do have a $25 iTunes gift card that I need to put to use. I was going to use it on, originally I was going to use it on the Throne of Atlantis, so if I were to watch them in order, I guess I need to knock out Son of Batman. Uh-oh.
What happened?
He just said, eh.
Oh.
Wasn't impressed.
No, I hadn't seen it yet.
Oh.
But I don't know. I don't know. Are they still doing the chronological thing? I mean, there's some sort of chronological sense to doing that, or
to Throne of Atlantis?
Yeah, to going, you know, Son of Batman to Throne of Atlantis.
I guess supposedly they're doing like two movies a year, one set in their like animated universe, and then one like off on its own.
Yeah.
Like last year was the Assault on Arkham, and I guess was it Son of Batman last year? So Son of Batman, I guess it's sort of set in that universe, except Batman having his own story.
I got you.
Now, I haven't seen Arkham, Assault on Arkham either.
Yeah.
I think Dirk's seen it, right?
Assault on Arkham?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the Batman movie that didn't really have Batman in it.
Oh, yeah.
Put his name
now
in
I
it.
I remember.
I mean, you know, got to sell it somehow.
Let's see, Fox renews Gotham for a second season.
Speaking of a Batman-less show.
Congrats to the show I don't watch. Batman vs. Superman fight coordinator teases brawl to end all brawls. Okay. Auditions for Marvel's Jessica Jones reveals the Purple Man will appear.
Which should be like a kind of a duh moment, I think. Mm-hmm. But hey, just...
Hey, I know nothing about the Purple Man except I guess he was in the previous arc of Daredevil that just ended. I think, because I read some issue with it with him starring in it.
And apparently his children, he had children or something? Or
Yeah.
He did, and his progeny came around and, you know, caused a lot of trouble.
Yeah, as they would do.
Mm-hmm.
So Arrow and the Flash both came back this week. And Stephen Amell denied rumors that he would be revived via the Lazarus Pit, which, if you watched the episode last night, you'll know if that was true or not. That's all I'm going to say. Next up we have, I guess, rest in peace to Mortal Kombat Legacy's Kano and Arrow actor Darren Shalavi passed away. I need to look him up, see who he was.
He played Constantine. I think he was one of the, according to Amell, he was like one of the first ones he fought. So his name was Constantine something or other. Constantine Dracon. Yeah, he was like, he was one of the first guys that ever fought on Arrow.
Oh, okay. So for season one, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Okay. Next up, we got... Just get some of that. Well, Paul Bettany supposedly has kept the Vision secret for 3 years. I think we actually reported on that not sometime last year.
Yeah, probably.
Bruno Heller promises a shocking Gotham finale, teases Red Hood's arrival. Marvel Corden, how you say this name? Chiwetel.
Do it, Tim. Do it.
Oh, Chiwetel.
Chiwetel.
Ejiofor. Ejiofor
for leading role in Doctor Strange.
But to make it clear in the audience, I mean, in the article, it's not Doctor Strange.
Obviously.
Oh well, yeah, but
I've seen like 5 different guesses on who it could be. Some people were saying, I like the one that it's Brother Voodoo since he's been revived and is starring in Uncanny Avengers.
Sure.
I mean, I guess it's possible.
Yeah. That would seem like that would be something for a sequel, though, to me.
Yeah. 3 actors join X-Men Apocalypse as Cyclops, Jean Grey, and Storm. And Melissa Benoist cast as Supergirl from Glee, I believe.
Correct. Oh,
great. Another Glee person gets work.
Yeah. More work for everyone.
I've never heard of.
That's kind of how it was with everything. All the X-Men casting and then that.
Well, hey, Flash worked out, so sure.
Yeah. But this is on a big-time network.
You're saying CW. Fox is not a... I mean, CW is not a big-time network now?
I'd actually prefer if it was on CW. They know how to handle this stuff. It's the NBCs, the ABCs, and CBSs you have to worry about.
Yeah, that's valid.
All right, over into regular comic book news. DC regains market share from Marvel in December of 2014. Off the strength of something, I'm sure.
Was it off the strength of any of the books in our draft?
Well, Forever Evil, that's funny. Have been. That was a while ago.
It says Batman, so move it along.
There were the April 2015 solicits came out. Tuesday, Marvel held their Secret Wars live kickoff, where they released some more information regarding the spring/summer event coming later this year. And I guess the big news was that the Marvel 616 universe and the Ultimate Universe would be would have an incursion, and both worlds would merge together, and that's what kicks off Secret Wars.
So, is this a crisis?
This is a crisis with a flashpoint.
You can call it that.
I think I will. Thank you.
Yeah.
Quicksilver is going to be the one to be the linchpin in all of this. He's going to save the world and kill it at the same time. Then they're going to go back in time, and then it's just going to just start everything anew again. It's going to be great. Well,
reverse Quicksilver is going to go back and destroy Quicksilver's real parents, you know, because it's not Magneto, so we'll find out who it really is. But then reverse Quicksilver will try to wipe him out. So then Quicksilver will go back, and then, I don't know, who's the Pandora of the Marvel Universe? Because she's got to get involved.
Scarlet Witch. But then Pandora's not even, like, around anymore, or she's not a thing that's important.
Yeah, but she's got a book. She's in Trinity of Sin.
That's going to end, too.
5 people read.
Ah.
So here's the best part about that Battle World map that's out there right now. If you look really closely, you can see Scrooge McDuck's money bin.
No.
Is that in the Wastelands?
And yeah, it's in the Wastelands. It's like right there. And Cinderella's castle is like somewhere over there. So you can see that part of the Marvel Universe come into play whenever it gets there. It's going to be great. I'm telling you. Gizmo Duck against Black Panther. Just you wait. So I don't know. There's it's weird. This whole thing is weird. I don't know what else to say about it, except for there's going to be a whole lot of marketing behind it, and I'm scared.
Yeah, there's definitely some trepidation on most fans' part because there's just no way to know what's going to happen. There's all these rumors, and of course, we see little drips and drabs of news coming out, and some articles that say, or, you know, that kind of blare, you know, that as clickbait headlines that say Marvel's publishing is going to scale back. And now that basically freaks out everyone that's a fan of some of the more exclusive, or maybe that's not the best word. Maybe the stories that are based solely around one character and are kind of that kind of occupy their own corner of the Marvel universe. You know, we'll throw out Ms. Marvel as an example. We'll throw out even Hawkeye as an example. And even though Hawkeye's ending, I'm just using that as an example of titles that have their own place in the Marvel universe and may not, you know, everyone's wondering how those titles are going to be affected by the ending of the Marvel universe proper.
I think that's just getting, Hawkeye's just getting a reboot, so it's not ending, but...
Right, but then what happens to that book, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it'll be just like Mighty Avengers and any other, and it'll probably get tied into, well, I don't know about Hawkeye, but it'll probably get tied into the event some kind of crazy way. But the scaling back part is not a bad deal, because, I mean, granted, they can't say, well, we want 52 books to be out and then cancel every other one after two issues type of deal.
Right.
Not saying anybody does that, but, you know, the scaling back is probably a good thing, considering as many, say, Wolverine books there was, but even though that's not a factor anymore, or any other, you know, just kind of bringing stuff in for a big event like this is probably good until it comes out and then see where things lie. You know, and
well, I mean, there also reaches a point where you've got Avengers and New Avengers and Secret Avengers and Avengers World, and you had Avengers AI and Avengers Academy and Avengers Undercover and Avengers League, I don't know, whatever, Avengers books. So
the line is shrinking now, so as for now.
I prefer to think of it as imploding, not as much shrinking.
Mm. You say tomato, I say
tomato.
Watermelon.
Ah!
So I did have some fun going on the map and looking up all the places, and you notice that there are some regions on the map. You click on it, it says classified, but then it has a date on it. I'm assuming that those dates will have, that's when they'll be announced in February and in March. So, yay. Of course, I'm very confused by Convergence, but I'm slightly interested in Secret Wars, plural.
I don't know. My patience is, you know, like I have limited patience for this stuff right now. It's funny kind of reading some of the various opinion pieces online about this. And, you know, the one of the better ones that I read, Let the Inner Fanboy in the Writer, I believe it was In Your Face Jam, I think it's called, on Comic Book Resources, where the writer let his inner fanboy out and let the inner fanboy rant. And I felt like more of me was on the side of the inner fanboy just ranting and raving. But, you know, as an older comic book reader and as a reviewer now and a co-host of the Comic Book Chronicles, I have to, you know, have patience, you know, and I think that's what we all need. You know, we need to, you know, not sound the alarm, and we just need to have a little bit of patience and see how this goes. We all know that we're probably not going to be that happy.
Well, the thing is, these types of stories I actually enjoy if they're done well. The problem is, I'm looking at Marvel, and I'm looking at Age of Ultron, and I'm looking at Axis, and I'm looking at Original Sin, and I'm looking at all of these events that they've had that I've either ended up not caring about or being somewhat hostile towards. And so now, you know, they're pushing this, and I'm just not enthusiastic about the possible outcome.
Yeah. Like, at this point, we're kind of just picking fun, but I think we may have some sort of initial impression about it, but at the same time, we're still kind of, like you said, we're still trying to see where it goes and being optimistic about it. It could turn out all right. I don't know. Or something good could come out of it. We just have to wait and see. That new Quack City, though, that's pretty good. That's on the map.
Yeah, I guess that'll be a Howard the Duck.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny. I have not had a chance to look at this map. They called it New Quack City.
Yeah, the say something, Dirk.
Yeah, it's number 23 on the map.
Yeah.
So let's see. Where are the cash money?
23 is right there. Let me see if I can zoom. Can I zoom? Or is this? Whoa, there we go. Here's 23 is right down here.
That's pretty good.
Down towards the bottom. So, New Quack City.
That's funny.
New Quack City is actually right next to Marville. Oh, if you remember that fantastic series.
I don't.
On the other side is the Far East.
That's Bill Jemis, isn't it?
Yep. Oh, the terrible series that nobody liked. And then right above it is New Mars.
So is that going to be like the Kree or Inhumans or something?
Or John Carter? Because it's a
Disney thing, might be
John Carter. Yeah, John Carter.
Yeah.
It might be John
Carter.
Bringing in everything. So I guess we haven't really talked about yesterday and today they released, slogans to go along with Secret Wars, like they call those banner headings.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a Last Days, which would be, I guess the heroes in the Marvel Universe will realize that their world is about to end, so instead of trying to stop it, they just all decide to, you know, how would they spend their last days, is basically.
So it's like that one issue of New Avengers.
Right.
Yeah. I must say, they already did this.
Yeah.
It's a New Avengers. And there was one today called, it's going to have the Battle World logo on it, and supposedly that'll be the crux of the main Marvel Universe going into, along with the Secret Wars. Mini series, and I'm assuming what they're gonna do is, you know, there's gonna be all these Secret Wars related books going on, but then there's still gonna be a couple books that aren't tying into it specifically, like maybe like Unbeatable Squirrel Girl and Ant-Man and stuff like that might still be doing their own stories up until probably Secret Wars ends, and then they'll have whatever final ending point, just like Convergence, everything's ending in, was it March
or some sort of flash forward.
Yeah, well, just everything will end at a certain month, and when they pick back up, if they pick back up, it'll be in the new Marvel Universe, whatever's left over after Secret Wars.
Gotcha.
It's going to be like that season of Lost where they did the Flash sideways. That's what this is going to be. So it's just going to annoy everybody.
Ah,
yeah.
That's funny.
All right.
Great.
They're going to have product placement to go along with Secret Wars.
Well, listen, Bendis was on, what was it, Late Night with Seth Meyer.
Yeah.
So it's a full all-out media push.
I thought that was for like Powers more so than this. I didn't see it.
Well, I didn't watch it either, but I saw a post about it, and I know that he did speak about Secret Wars. So.
I got you. Okay.
Does anybody watch Seth Meyers?
No.
Caught it once.
I don't watch late night shows.
It's before Tim's after Tim's bedtime. That's what it is.
I've never seen the point in them. I mean, people get up there, they do their monologue and tell a couple jokes and then envy people.
If I'm up that late, I'm watching Twilight Zone on MeTV.
It's for people with kids who won't go to sleep, so they're up.
That's right.
Actually, yeah.
All right. This is going to be a Justice League TNT NBA All-Star comic.
I think it's out.
What?
Yeah, we got posters, promotional posters for it that we just kind of looked at. Everybody kind of shrugged, and they just went into the free pile.
DC said, ESPN and Marvel aren't the only ones that can cross-promote.
Oh, hey, it's Charles Barkley versus The Flash. Who wouldn't want that?
Oh, Lord. Are you serious?
I saw something in there about that.
Hey,
I
think. You know, Barkley versus Godzilla was fantastic, so
yes.
Why
not? Yes. Yeah, it says official release date is January 21st. But you can read it through the link that we have. Well, that should be around.
Yes.
Actually, you can read the whole thing for free on this article that I got.
And what else we got? Milestone Media rises again. Hedlin, Cowan, and Dingle will revive company with eye towards characters of color. Just got some buzz yesterday. But as our friend of the podcast, William Bruce West, told me, as he said, they just made an announcement. They don't even have promo art or anything to go with it. So he's not getting too excited over it until he actually sees some product being made.
Yeah.
One of those wait-and-see type deals. And I guess something that is kind of newsworthy with it is the plan is to release stuff across a whole bunch of different companies. Like, DC is still going to be making stuff, but they're also going to try to have books at other publishers to spread the wealth around. So,
I don't know why, but I'm kind of leery about the Hudlin connection to this, but there's nothing to say until we see something.
Yeah. Next up, And it wasn't in we don't have it listed in our comic book news, but Disney comics are returning to IDW.
Oh yeah,
There you go.
So,
which seems weird to me, but yeah.
Yeah, that Disney/Marvel wouldn't put it out.
Yeah, but somehow it kind of makes sense, because IDW has been doing like those artists. Well, they've been doing artist stuff. They've been putting out stuff for them anyway.
Well, the only thing, it looks like these are all just reprints.
Yeah.
It's not anything new. And IDW has been doing a lot of reprints with Popeye, with Haunted Horror, with Weird Love, reprinting stuff from the 40s and 50s. So it just kind of makes sense since they're already doing it. And since they do have whatever that agreement is with Marvel to do the artist editions type books, that they're just going to allow them to reprint that stuff, for the nominal royalty, as opposed to when Boom had it. Boom was doing some reprint books and some brand new material, and Marvel kind of snatched up that new material and reprinted it under the Marvel banner when they got the license, but now it looks like they're allowing IDW to do all the reprint stuff.
And now that I think about it, I feel like we've talked about this before, that IDW was doing this, because I remember seeing some headlines about certain, like you were saying, reprints of things they were doing before now.
So they're gonna start with I forget what book.
Uncle Scrooge's
first book they're gonna start with, and then would they say Mickey Mouse after that?
I think I remember seeing.
I don't have it in front of me, but they put out a graphic that has like a, it looks like a Chutes and Ladders board game, and you basically follow it along, and it tells you which books are coming out which months.
Yeah.
You can do a search; you'll find it.
Yeah. Well, that goes along. Let's see, any variant covers that need to be brought up? Marvel launches Evolution of Howard the Duck variant to follow Ant-Man shrinking variant. And that's about it.
Yeah.
Oh, Dirt read a couple books this week, I see.
What, this surprises you?
You're supposed to be like me and only get like 3 books in. Making me look bad.
I even typed up a full review.
Haha.
Which you guys can read at popculturenetwork.com.
Ding! All right, so we ready to review some books?
Don't you have an ad copy you're supposed to read?
What was that?
Don't you have an ad copy you're supposed to read?
Thank you. I have it up on my iPad. You know how this show goes now.
Do I need to put that in there?
Yeah, you can throw it up somewhere to remind me each week. I actually remember before the show, but of course the show gets rolling. Let's see, this will be an ad for Busted Tees. This episode of the Comic Book Chronicles is sponsored by Busted Tees, your home for funny, awesome, cool t-shirts that will get your friends' attention. Eye-catching t-shirts like the John McCain winter sweater, ho-ho-ho, yippee-ki-yay, every generation of bat suits, Lynx lawn care, couldn't show up since 1986, Zingif's gym, and much more are on sale. To help keep our podcast free, order from Busted Tees by going to coldslitterpodcast.com. That's coldslitterpodcast.com. Then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Busted Tees banner and then shop for awesome t-shirts. Busted Tees through coldslitterpodcast.com.
Although, one thing I want to throw out real quick, Tim, is that it's the John McClane shirt, not John McCain shirt. A little bit different.
I'll have to make an edit in the Word document I'm reading because that is what it says, McCain.
I mean, a John McCain Christmas sweater is certainly an interesting item that's guaranteed to raise some eyebrows, but I don't think that's what they're advertising.
I believe you're correct.
And at this point, Bruce Willis is almost old enough to play John McCain doing John McClane.
So, no! No! That's fun.
All right.
All right, so what we got, fellas?
What are we going to tackle first? Was there a big, huge book this week?
Yeah.
I only read 3, so...
Oh.
Now, Matt, I ain't get to Justice League. Oh, Batman and Robin came out this week, too. Damn it.
Stop looking at my list.
I'm just going down and seeing what y'all read.
Hey, let's go ahead and get Guardians out of the way. That was interesting.
Oh, yeah, I did read that.
Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah.
Oh, Guardians of the Galaxy 2023.
So let me rant on this a little bit.
Okay.
So this is what, issue 3 or 4 of the Planet of the Symbiotes story arc, and it took the last issue for us to finally get to this planet, which was awesome to see.
Was it 3 or 4? Because I think this is it.
I'm saying this was like the
this was the last one.
Yeah, this was the last one, but the arc was like at least three issues, if not four. Yeah.
Well, I mean, hey, you saw how they stretched out that the Nova thing.
I don't know if Bendis, it doesn't seem like Bendis is doing that so much on like all the X-Men books, but Guardians, everything seems like he's stretching stuff out so long. Like even when he launched the series, nothing was like happening in it.
Yeah.
There was a whole rule about, you know, no one could step foot on Earth, but that never like went anywhere. Earth was invaded by Thanos, so Guardians did a terrible job of guarding Earth. They can't even do their job right.
Right, and then that's when we started getting Avengers going out of space with them. Yeah,
Avengers doing their job for them. But anyway, to get back on the task of this story arc, so we finally see the Planet of the Symbiotes. Venom gets an upgrade, not just costume upgrade, but supposedly powers, which I guess we'll see displayed later on. And the art was great by Valerio Schiti. But yeah, it took three or four issues just to get to this point. Like the arc was called like Planet of Symbiotes, and we don't see it until like midway through this issue. We got issues of, oh, the symbiote's taking over Groot, it's taking over Rocket, it's taking over Drax.
Yeah.
Entire issues of that stuff.
Yeah, the entire issues of that.
But we have playing, a trade, so
of playing hot potato with the symbiote. Or actually find out the name of the alien species.
Yep, they get a backstory, and they get slightly redeemed, I guess.
Yeah.
Right, that was very shocking. That was very shocking to have them be, you know, well, you know, no spoiler alert, or mild spoiler alert, that they're not as nefarious as we had initially assumed them to be, yeah. You know? I was very shocked by that.
Yeah. Which, it was, well done, Bendis, because it was like, not to say that this couldn't have been plotted out, you know, this way, but it was actually like, okay, sure, I could believe this is the case. Like, yeah, because they even go into talking about, you know, how the symbiotes, if the farther away from Earth, the link is broken, and you know, some symbiotes get tainted, as it were, or whatever, because they lost their connection to the planet and this and that other. It's, and I really hate to do this, it almost kind of reminds me of DS9 a little bit, with the Founders and Odo's people, if you know that series.
Yeah.
But not to the same effect, but it just kind of reminded me of that a little bit, and I apologize for any DS9 fans, because that's really horrifying. But outside of that, yeah, it was just weird. It's like, okay, they just fleshed out a nice little backstory and gave them a little, you know, they're benevolent, and I assume we're going to see them again at some point, or they're, you know, there's going to be some use for them again. It was just kind of weird, but nicely, actually, surprisingly done, I guess.
Okay. So that's Guardians, and next issue kicks off their Black Vortex involvement.
Right. Along with what I'm thinking of was that we're going to, I'm thinking that's why these other ones kind of got the way they were, because it was like, they were just kind of got, well, we don't really have anything major for the Guardians to do, so let's just put this stuff in between to get to Black Vortex.
The other arc, we said that wasted, even though we found out Nova's, yeah, the Black, so there was a Original Sin tie-in that had nothing really to do with Original Sin, except that a secret was revealed.
Yeah.
Same thing with his Uncanny X-Men. No one saw a secret from the Watcher's eye, but a secret was revealed. So it kind of ties together.
Yeah. They got him here, and now they're in Black Vortex, which I guess I'm going to have to read Star-Lord now. So
Star-Lord's pretty good.
I hear.
But outside of that, which I haven't read.
Okay. But yeah, that was pretty much it for Guardians. It is what it was.
All right. Next up.
All right. Moon Knight number 11. I'll go ahead and put this out there. So after the events of the last couple of issues, Mark, the Khonshu's left Mark and gone with somebody else for found a better deal. Mark was arrested, beaten up, and is somewhere being experimented on or what have you. He doesn't exactly know why, but as of this issue, he's trying to find out. You know, he's talking with Khonshu the whole time. You know, all this other stuff's happening to him. And the end of the book, he gets somewhere.
He's not exactly where you think, right? He's not where he thinks he is.
Exactly. I read that out the hard way.
Right. I read this book. It was It was just a very interesting read. I did not remember what had happened in the previous issue. I didn't bother to read the first page to refresh my memory. I just kind of jumped in, and it was just a very interesting read. The way it was laid out was, you know, it was very unique. Smallwood, I give Greg Smallwood, who's doing art on this, a lot of credit for kind of presenting this in a fairly unique style using many panels. There's 1-6 with, there's how many panels here? 3 across, 15 panels on a page.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I thought that was pretty, you know, and you know, that was telling a lot of story in just these, you know, in on this one page. I was pleased to see that, given, you know, the decompressed storylines that we've all gotten used to, right?
Right.
To see all that stuff happening on one page. As you said, you know, it's an interesting there's a quiet dialogue going on in this.
Yeah.
Exactly, in this book. And there's just a small bit of action, but as you said, we get to this point where Mark Spector has kind of recovered from a predicament that he found himself in, and then finds himself not where he thinks he is, and probably in a lot of peril. So, without spoiling too much, I've basically told this story.
Yeah, it was an intriguing read, so, you know, if definitely. You're interested, pick it up.
Definitely, definitely. It is the middle part, or at least the following chapter to... It follows directly from the last issue, unlike some of the previous Moon Knight issues that were kind of one-offs. So I would definitely recommend circling back and reading the issue prior.
Yeah, like I remember just enough of the story to kind of keep me there. But there was that one moment where I was like, wait a minute, do I have to read? Oh, wait, that happened. So.
Gotcha. All right, let's see what you guys read. All right, who read All New X-Men 35?
I did.
I actually did, yeah.
Dirt read it too.
Oh, wow.
Well, it's Ultimate Universe, so...
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that was probably the big draw, because this is, you know... What's funny about this issue is that it resembled an event issue that would, you know, for an Ultimate Universe event, because it has everyone in it, right?
Well, yeah,
like, I mean, everything was, else is, you know, like, canceled, was so. Cataclysm, or what was... That's what this... You know, that's what this resembled. You know, it's not so much an issue of All New X-Men. It's really All New X-Men guest star, you know, guest appearing in a big Ultimate Universe event.
Which, you know, as soon as this story arc's over, I'm dropping All New X-Men.
You know. You want to learn about the Utopians? Utopians are Kerman.
Goodness.
Yeah, I'm out of Black Vortex, but anyway.
that is like one of those events that's going to be like 5 parts too long.
Probably.
Because it's crossing over into so many books, and then it has a Alpha and Omega issue, but continue.
I don't know if there's anything else to add.
I was going to say there's one interesting scene in this book, and I'm not spoiling too much, because if you read the previous issue, you would know that young Hank Pym is in the thrall of Ultimate Universe Doom, or Van Damme, for God's sake. And he reveals some information to Van Damme in a pretty unique way that's reminiscent. He basically draws out the chalk timeline that we've become familiar with.
Right.
Yeah, that was fun.
And seeing that in the hands of the ultimate character, you know, the ultimate version of Dr. Doom, you know, got my, you know, my mind racing and thoughts churning, thinking, oh, how is this going to play out in the near future, given what we know now about what's going to happen around Secret War?
I thought Dr. Doom was a good guy in the Ultimate Universe.
No.
So he joined the FF.
Well, he was always working for his own end. But if
as
that meant
Doom
working with
to be, right.
Yeah, if it meant helping the good guys to get what he wanted, then that's what he would do. But he was never actually a good guy. But I just thought it was, as soon as I saw this green, like, you know, because it's not a chalkboard, it's Doom's digital whiteboard thing. And he's got right. his little stylus that he's drawing on. But as soon as I saw it, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's another chalkboard. So, of course, the first thing you do is start, like, magnifying it, trying to look through here. We got, you know, Secret Wars on the timeline.
Mm-hmm.
We've got an offshoot here with Dazzler as president is being listed on there.
Right.
You've got Avengers disappear at one point on there. You've got the funny thing is, though, is that there's a mark right around the same time as Dazzler as president and in between M-Day and Avengers disappear where it says 2099. So
right.
2099 is also one of the Battle World areas. So there's obviously something more going on with 2099 than just it being, you know, way off in the future, because that makes no sense in this timeline.
Right.
But, you know, you can see timelines going to Bishop's future. You can see one that says Logan is old. Scott Summers goes to space. Xavier, last will and testament. So, I mean, all the stuff that's going on is...
Do they have a 31st century one?
Do what?
Do they have a 31st century?
Well, nothing else has dates. It's all just on a timeline. So.
Right. It is.
If they were putting in OG Guardians in there.
Oh, I don't see them being listed.
Yeah, I didn't see it here. But I don't know how far forward this is, because I think the furthest forward it goes is a mix of Logan is old and Bishop's future.
Mm.
Well, Hope and Cable.
That's true. Hope and Cable.
So it's sticking around a point, sounds like.
Right. But yeah, like I said, that got my thoughts going, just to see that, you know, information being laid out for this particular character, and seeing, you know, and thinking about how it could play into the near future stories. It was a pretty it was a pretty fun read.
Yeah, well, and of course you got the fun banter of Iceman thinks Iceman is annoying, and everybody thinks Iceman's annoying, so they think it's actually funny that Iceman finds Iceman annoying.
You have Angel and Rogue.
Angel's like, so your Angel's dead, huh? It's a little awkward.
But you're alive.
The one thing that I dislike about this particular arc, though, is the way Bendis is doing these issues, where the last issue ended with Jean Grey screaming, oh my gosh, is that really what I think I'm seeing? And then you come back and it's like, what? And she's like, oh, look at all these dots. Those are all mutants. Like, okay, we know how Cerebro works. We don't care. Like, that's the cliffhanger we got. And then at the end of this one, there's some explosion with Miles Morales jumping through the air, and she's screaming, oh my God, Miles! And like, that's the cliffhanger. Like, he's not going to die. You know, so it's like, again, we've got Jean Grey screaming over something that's going to be a nothing cliffhanger. You know?
Listen to Dirt blowing up Bendis' spot. There you go.
Well, you know.
We just did it with Guardians earlier.
It's true.
Before we get to more reviews, I forgot I was going to bring this up earlier. My brother had posted this on Facebook, Adam Black. He had said, for his comic book friends, with the news of the Marvel comic book universe ending, is there something that you hope will change with this reboot? If there were something that you could change for the better in the comics line, what would you do? He want me to ask it to the panel.
That's
I gave my realistic, instead of saying what I want to happen, I gave my realistic thoughts of what would happen. And it basically was saying, probably less mutants. It'll go back to the all-new X-Men being the, you know, starting in a book by themselves, probably. And they'll be the only X-Men we see for a while. Then they'll start trickling in other mutants as guest stars and villains. Kind of how, like, the New 52 started and we didn't get all the heroes right away.
Yeah, well, because my first thought when you said that question was that Schism never happened. That's what I would go back to and take
bringing the
out.
X-Men back, yeah.
The Schism has kind of ended, though, right?
Well, but the whole splitting of the team and Scott going off and being a dork and starting his own school and, you know, get rid of all that stuff. But if you could do that with just having the all-new X-Men, the young X-Men being the only X-Men team, I'd be fine with that, too.
I don't know. The only thing I can think of is, like, I don't want to... Well, one, I don't want to lose. There's a couple of books I really don't want to lose, which I don't know if is going to be a factor or not. I'm also kind of curious about, say... Well, see, I don't know. This is a weird thing to answer right now because there's still some stuff about Secret Wars we really don't know.
Right.
So the only thing I could even hope for is, like, well, just don't lose a couple of good books. And, like, the thing that we've always talked about with, like, say, Mighty Avengers, like, just being ultimately tied to a book and not standing on its own and kind of getting lost in the events, that kind of thing I don't want to happen. And I don't want anything else to happen to the current Captain America at this point, because, you know, it hasn't been that long.
Right.
So if they did some dumb stuff, like just put him in the Secret Wars, and was like, hey, nope, this is... this.
Well, that's the back door to get Steve back as Cap, Wolverine right. alive, Deadpool back alive,
right.
Professor X.
I don't think that part, that one probably is not going to happen, though.
I think it will. It'll go back to them being back at the five original, back at the school with Professor X, back to the old, you know, the very original days, except told with the newer slant. It'll be like they're getting their cake, they're having their cake and eating it too with like Ultimate Universe. They want it to be like a good jumping on point for new readers. So this is basically what this is, you know, Ultimate Universe version, what, five by now?
Right. But see, that's the thing. That's what I'm thinking. It seems like to me, and this is just a theory, that they've taken great pains to kind of get rid of certain people or make them less relevant. Because Professor X, The Watcher, which granted you can... you know, it's kind of his relevancy anyway. Nick Fury, people that's kind of been there for a while and has some, you know, tied to pretty much everything at some one point or another. I'm not even going to say Uncle Ben, because at this point, you know, that is what it is, because he's never really been a factor, even though I think he's around now or something, from what I've seen.
Right. Sort of.
Yeah, I hadn't read too much into that. But either way, they're just kind of getting these certain people to kind of say, well, these people are not really relevant to today's climate anymore. Let's just kind of push those over to the side and, you know.
I mean, they've made such a big deal about Falcon taking over as Captain America, about having the new female Thor, about doing some of these big character changes, that it almost seems too quick for them to turn their backs on him.
Yeah, true. And that's the kind of thing I'm kind of hoping, I mean, pinning on, but you never really know.
If they ship by, you know, twice a month, by the time Secret Wars ends, they'll have like 20 plus issues of each.
I almost wonder if whatever type of reset they do will be similar to the New 52, where certain books like, you know, Batman and Green Lantern after Flashpoint, they're pretty much untouched. You know, whereas other books had radical changes, those really didn't change. And I wonder if Thor and Captain America and maybe even Iron Man will just kind of, like, everything that they went through still happened.
Right.
Maybe it just happened a little more compressed, but otherwise that still happened.
So everything with Cap just still happens, but, you know.
But him being thawed out and then losing the super soldier serum and becoming an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. all happened within, you know, the last 7 years, you know.
Which books would be chosen to, I guess all the new characters would be the ones to stick with the status quo.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because then they've already said that Avengers was going to change, but that wasn't, I mean, that changes every now and then anyway, so that's not a real big, you know.
And it's probably way too early to speculate on what the all-new, all-different lineup for that will be.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just wanted to get that out before I forgot.
Sure.
And didn't they already announce a new Uncanny Avengers?
Yeah. And yeah.
That starts next week, I think.
And that would seem like an odd thing for them to launch and do, like, two issues of, and then it's over.
It'll probably still be running as Secret Wars is going on up until the end.
Ugh.
Or change to X-Avengers.
That's true.
All right. Let me get the Valiant number 2 out, and I'll have all three of my books done. Because I didn't get a chance to read Ivar the Time Walker, which was another new relaunch from Valiant First, I think they're calling it, but their new motto. But Valiant 2 takes place where there's this big enemy that the Eternal Warrior has been fighting throughout the generations, and he's been trying to protect the Geomancer, and he's failed the last couple times, but now he's got backup in the Valiant, which is, as of now, just Ninjak, and they want to recruit Exo Manowar. But there's a nice little opening sequence where we see Ninjak, like, undercover in the snow. It's supposedly, like, there's panel boxes that we get to read his internal monologue, and it's like he's been, like, in camouflage in the snow for, like, 12 hours or something like that. And it kind of shows the dedication of, you know, being this master ninja assassin type character. And the art's by Paulo Rivera, which... goes without saying it's pretty nice on it. And even so, Jeff Lemire and Matt Kent have the writing duties on it, but they also double up and do some art when they do this like little flashback sequence to the Geomancer. She's like telling the story of how story her dad told her when she was a kid. So Lemire does the art for those flashback stories, and Matt Kent did the watercolors on it. So it's kind of cool. So issue 3 ends with, like, you know, who's going to be the next person recruited? And it's got, like, this big TV screen of, like, all the different, like, Valiant characters. So, like, you know, who's going to be picked to join up with them next? And it's probably just going to be Ezra Manowar, because that's all, who they've teased already. But so I'm enjoying the Valiant. 2 more issues to go. And if you haven't, check out the Ivar Time Walker also. I'm sure it's another hilarious book in the vein of Archer and Armstrong from the same creative team. Fred Van Lente and I think Clayton Henry does the art. So that's my non-Big Two book of the week.
Yeah.
I got one of them in.
That's funny.
Nice.
All right. Let's see here. What the... Dirt, I see you read Batman and Robin 38.
I did indeed.
What'd you think? The first issue of Damian Wayne busting loose.
Yeah, with crazy superpowers.
That is an understatement.
He has kind of an ill-defined power set at this point.
Well, yeah, because it's the first issue where he's busting loose.
And it's kind of a Superman-ish mm-hmm. power set, I guess you could say, but... I don't know. I thought it was an interesting way that they dealt with it, with him having him knowing that he has these powers and kind of going out of his way to use them, and Batman immediately smacking him down.
Right. Trying to shut him down and pull him back. Yeah.
And basically saying you have to figure out what these are and what your limits are before you go out and try to use them, which on the one hand, yes, makes sense. And on the other hand, he's very much the overprotective dad again. You know, after all this has happened, there's no way he wants to lose him again. And so I think that adds a nice touch, you know, to the storyline, because it does make sense. It would make no sense if he's just like, okay, now you're invincible, and he just, you know, would pick him up and chuck him into a group of bad guys. So
right.
I
was just going to say, what was great was Alfred's role in that.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I like the little touches of he had the nightmare and he's floating off of his bed.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends up crashing through the roof above him into Alfred's room, which I guess Alfred lives up in the attic like Mr. Belvedere. I never really thought about it. But
wait a second.
His daughter took his place, remember?
He said Mr. Belvedere. This is what I get for having the chat window open. Hold on. He said Mr. Belvedere. Oh, where's Bob Uecker when you need him?
Yeah, no doubt, really. I mean, that just goes for life in general.
That's funny.
But anyway.
So, I mean, I like this. Like I said, my favorite scenes in this actually revolved around Alfred's role as an intermediary and as, you know, Bruce's father figure. So, you know, to kind of, give Batman some fatherly advice and say, hey, you know what? You may need to back off a little. So, you know, I particularly like that. And I wasn't 100% sure where the story was going and the reappearance of, I guess, spoiler alert, reject clones of Damian Wayne.
Right.
I did not read a lot of the stories that, you know, where these creations were made. So, it was kind of out of nowhere for me, but, you know, it still
if
made
you remember,
sense.
Well, if you remember back right after he died, Batman and Robin, for several months, it was like Batman and Wonder Woman, Batman right. and Aquaman, Batman and right. Two-Face, Batman and...
That's
and so it was
reading.
Part of that run. Yeah, okay. It was part of that series of books where all that happened.
Gotcha.
But one of the things that I didn't really think about until I got to the end of the story was the fact that for us as readers, and of course for Batman, Alfred, you know, we've had all these months of touching stories where they missed him and they were mourning him, and then they went out, they were trying to rescue his body, and, you know, all this kind of month after month. For Damian, he was in the middle of a fight and he blacks out and he wakes up and everyone's
standing around. He remembers getting stabbed, right.
Right. So, but for him, it's like no time has passed. It's like, oh, I got stabbed, but apparently it wasn't that big a deal because here I am. Oh, whoops, now I have superpowers. But for everyone else, it's been months and months and months and months of dealing with the tragedy. So he's going to have a different point of view from everyone else because for him, it's just another day, you know?
Right.
Everything went dark and then everything got light again and everything's okay.
Whoop-de-doo.
So Yeah, so he's got to deal with that. But it is, I always liked the progression of the character, because when you first saw him, he was very unlikable. He was very judgmental. He was very impulsive. And then as the series went along, as you got to know the character more, he became more likable. Mm-hmm. And he became more grounded in this new family that he has. And so when they brought him back, this time, you could see it continuing on that story progression where he does, at the end of this issue, you can see that he is that likable character that he had become. It's not that he woke up from this and now suddenly he's going crazy because he has powers and he's taking over the world. He still has that that nicer side to him, and that comes out very clearly in the story.
Alrighty. Let's see. Well, I filled up every single line of my part of the sheet, so...
Bragging.
Let's see what else you guys read.
Well, did you read anything else DC?
I read Justice League 38.
Okay. Oh.
I read just as you can tell, I spent a lot of time commuting this week. the Justice League 38. Although I didn't have time. What's funny is I did not have time to make notes, so I'm going to have to flip back and take a quick skim through the book to remember what I had to, what I might have had to say about the book. Dirt, did you read this?
Yes.
Okay, so I found this book to be, or at least the ending of the book to be kind of, I was nonplussed by it. I was actually impressed by the beginning of this, the continuation of the immediate follow-up to the last issue, which is, spoiler alert, Batman being infected by the Amazovirus. Mm-hmm. And I thought, the immediate effects of that were kind of cool. I thought it was a great splash page that Fabok drew, the manifestation of the yes they are bat-like powers that,
well, and just to give a quick because obviously not everybody's reading this, is that the Amazovirus was created by Lex Luthor with the idea that he would infect Superman with it and Superman would lose his powers.
Oh, I was going to get to that part.
Oh, okay.
Because,
well,
that was because they didn't reveal that until this issue. I mean, did they reveal that prior to this? Well,
they revealed in the past that he created the virus to remove superpowers, but the side effect was on people without powers, it gives them power.
Right.
So it's,
I was going to say is I wasn't sure if they had revealed that it was specifically engineered by Luthor to deprive Superman of his powers, but it had these unintended side effects.
Right, but they did say that it's, for lack of a better term, it flips everybody on their axis. Shall we say.
You mean they're inverted?
We have this convergence of storylines.
Oh! Goodness.
And his original sin was his hatred of Superman.
All right, we are going beyond.
He's creating a schism in the superpower.
No. But anyway, so like
it's
I said,
the new age of Ultron. No, I can't do that one.
Like I said, I was going to get to that part because I thought that was a revelation in the story. I wasn't sure if that had been previously revealed.
Yeah, but it was. I mean, you kind of understand it's Luthor. Yeah, right. I mean, if it's Luthor and he's making something to deprive somebody of superpowers, obviously you know it's going to be Superman. But because it's Luthor, he's always thinking in the same Batman term. Whereas Batman always wants to be able to take somebody down should they go crazy, whereas Luthor always wants to take somebody down should they figure out his real agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a similar progression there. But, I mean, you know that if it's something that attacking superpowers, it's obviously going towards Superman. I mean,
right, or at least originally, as you said, as the story states, its original intent was to do that. But at the, I started talking about this book, jumping straight to the end, because I was kind of off put. I think I said nonplussed. I was kind of confused by the ending because
I'm not really sure where it's going.
Right. I didn't quite understand why and I think what threw me off were the reverse coloring of the word bubbles. Because that reminds me, the effect reminds me of a certain core of Lantern. Right? And it's not, I don't know if it's supposed to be, if it's intentional. It just, that was the first thing that popped into my mind. And I was like, why does it look like that?
Well, so, although, like, my first thought when you said that is to dismiss that. But then now that I think about it a little bit more, the third stage that Luther discovered is that when a non-superhuman person is infected with this virus, they get the superpowers, but then eventually it burns out their body and they die.
Right.
So there is death coming, technically, for all these people. So it very well could have a connection there to a character like Necron or the Black Lantern. And it is Geoff Johns, so it's not too far out of the loop to say that he would tie this into a Green Lantern storyline somehow. I really thought about it, but now that you say that, that does kind of work.
It's just funny that, you know, the one cue, and when you flip back to the issue, the one cue is the word bubbles, and you're like, oh, wait a second, the word balloons, you know? And you're like, wait a second, right. Where have I seen this before? So, as I said, you know, the story revealed a lot, the issue revealed a lot of what had been in the background of the story. You know, what we had been dealing with in the previous issues of the arc was the hunt for Patient Zero, and you know, dealing with the heroes that had taken ill. But now we've gotten some explanation, and now the story is really moving forward. But this was a kind of not a monkey wrench, but we're definitely thrown for a loop with the ending of this issue.
Yeah, but like I said, I'm just not really clear on where it's going. Usually, you can see how these things are progressing and how it's going to lead to some big battle or, you know, whatever. Right. And I just don't really see how this resolves itself. There's going to be something that's going to come out of left field and get involved here.
I foresee that as well. So, all right, let's see what else we have on the schedule.
Sounds like Geoff Johns is doing his best Brian Michael Bendis writing. We're not sure what's happening in the issues, and nothing's really happening.
And everything ties together, though. I did read Wonder Woman.
I skimmed that. Can you help me understand what is going on in Wonder Woman 38?
Okay, so basically, I have not been reading the series regularly, but because the Finches took over a couple issues ago, I jumped on to follow the storyline. And basically, you know, Wonder Woman she's supposed to be the queen of the Amazons,
but
because
also,
her mother,
right?
So therefore she would, you know, inherit the throne. Mm-hmm. She's also the god of war because she defeated Ares and took on the mantle. Plus she's part of Justice League. So she's being called away to always deal with what they're dealing with. And because of all these different things going on, she's being stretched very thin. And so she's becoming one of those jack of all trades, masters of none.
Right.
And it's coming back to bite her because she tried to create a democracy for the Amazons where every tribe has a voice in this new council, but instead it just forces these groups to butt heads and pick sides and nobody's agreeing on anything, and all this infighting is causing basically them to become weaker and more vulnerable. And because she is the god of war, all of these attributes that Ares really embraced are coming back to work against her, because she wants to be a uniter, but the fact that she is the god of war just means that battle and conflict follow her around. And so in the midst of everything, the Amazons have decided that they've had enough of dealing with her, and they are trying to recreate and give rebirth to Donna Troy and bring her in to basically usurp. Well, and that you found that out at the end of the last year. So
right,
it's not
but who the hell is reading Wonder Woman?
People who like the art.
Listen, I'm a huge fan of the Donna Troy character. I tried reading the last issue. I tried reading this issue. And yes, it is a Wonder Woman title. Yes, the Finches are developing this multifaceted Wonder Woman and stretching her thin and beyond, I guess, her previous limits and seeing where she might break. And that is one aspect of the story, but I want to see what they're doing, what they're going to do with Donna Troy. I thought that which character is that? Hesha, I think her name is. There's a conversation in a coffee shop, right? All the good conversations happen in coffee shop. Remember Friends? You know, between Diana and I believe the character's name is Hesha. She was an exiled Amazon. And basically, Hesha is telling Diana that, you know, change has to be gradual, because whatever she's trying to institute on Paradise Island is going to take some time to get used to, and whatever conflicts that may arise are just going to have to be weathered, because they did things a certain way for so long, with Hippolyta being the queen, that instituting this democracy is going to take a lot of getting used to. So it was kind of nice to see that, you know, kind of, you know, that third party, or at least the external counselor coming in and just giving her a good talking to, and just letting her know, hey, you know what, this isn't going to happen overnight. But then, of course, we get somebody sticking their nose in, trying to usurp, or at least establish a new power structure in Themyscira. I'm using some of these names interchangeably, I think.
Yeah. Well, and I think the big problem is just the fact that they're trying to cover so much to show how far she's being spread thin.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that they jump around, it is kind of jarring sometimes. You're jumping ahead a lot of times to different places and different locations without really understanding how much time has passed. Mm-hmm. And where exactly sometimes they are. And, you know, she's on the island, and then suddenly she's not on the island, she's having a conversation, and then suddenly she's off with the Justice League. And it's like, well, did that all happen in the same day? Did that happen in the same week? You know, like, how much time has passed? You don't know, because they are jumping around so much. I think if they were able to kind of solidify the timeline a little bit more so you understood better, you know, because this council comes together and they complain and then they break up, you know, in the last issue, and then they come back together in this issue.
Right.
And you don't know, is this the day after? Is this the next week? Is this
I think all this stuff is happening within the span of 24 to 36 hours. And that's the only way I can make sense of it all. But as I was asking you before, help me make sense of this turn.
So I, in general, like overall, it has more positives than negatives for me. I enjoy it, but I still think there is some refining that could have gone, maybe to use a movie term, it could have used a rewrite before it went to print, you know.
Gotcha.
But overall, it's been enjoyable.
All right. Well, I may have to just reread the previous issue and just give it another shot. I have to see. Let's see. What do we have
here? Excuse me.
Roddy, you all right?
Yeah.
You ready to talk about Captain America and the Mighty Avengers number 4?
Yes, Calgon, take me away.
Ah!
let's see. Yes, this is... Well, I have notes on this, but I'm not going to read from that because they were dumb. So this is,
I liked your notes.
Yeah, I was specifically being dumb for that because, you know, it's kind of what we do. But we are past Axis. We have a couple of different fronts going on here. We have Sam having, Sam having a Captain America worthy pity party. Because of, you know, thinking about his part in Axis.
I like so that. That was my favorite part of your notes.
Yeah. So he has to get talked down by Monica, or I guess tugged along. I guess I don't know what happened there, but he was pretty much talking himself out of it. She was just prompting him. But that was a good thing to see. Then on another front, we have Luke, you know, still acting like he's inverted for some reason. We will find out, or that we're starting to find out why. We have Power Man and Tigra. White Tiger trying to investigate the murder of Gideon Mace, who killed her parents.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently using. I'm not versed with this version of Power Man's powers, but I didn't know he could do that. Which I guess it makes sense given, you know, what I do know about it. So on all those fronts, the only thing that really stuck up out of this issue is one word that just happened to mention only twice. But really gets pointed. And the part of the villain, well, and that word is beyond. I'll leave it at that. And that, and that one part where Jason Cantrell, the one-time villain or whatever he is supposed to be, looks like Mephisto in one panel.
Right.
But outside of that, it was a decent read. Like I said, they just seem like they're just coming out of one event and kind of slowly moving into the next one.
Right. It's weird that... go ahead, Tim.
I was going to ask, this is post-Axis, right?
This is post-Axis, yes.
It is. So what's funny about this, I feel like we're getting far more Sam Wilson development as Captain America in this book than we're getting in his regular book.
Yes.
I know we're getting some of that in The Remender. We are. But I feel like we're getting more of it here. Isn't that funny? Because he has more characters to bounce off of.
Yeah. And that was the thing I was thinking about when I read this. It was like, this seems like it should have been in, his own book.
Story. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like the main Cap book. I'm a big fan of Monica Rambeau. I am happy to see her. I'm very happy to see her front and center in this book. But with regards to, I hate to say this, the weak parts of this book are the younger Avengers. I literally was flipping right past the Power Man and White Tiger pages. I really couldn't care less. It was very, it was very just kind of a filler part of the issue to me. It's interesting to see, Luke Cage trying to play slick, but obviously he's not the slickest guy in the world, as revealed in this book.
Well, that part I kind of like, because it kind of goes back to his earlier days, because, back when he was doing Heroes for Hire and he was doing a lot more detective work and whatnot, right. It kind of goes back to that, but apparently his foe is a little too slick for that.
Yeah, but I was going to say, but he also doesn't have the immediate partner to bounce things off of, like Danny Rand,
Right, and he's trying to push Jessica away.
Exactly. Know? So, that part was okay. I definitely was much more into reading the I want to call her Captain Marvel because that's what I grew up knowing her as. But the Spectrum and Falcap part of the story was the most interesting part of this book for me.
Yeah, which I guess we should go back to the cover basically plays off of Power Man and Tiger and White Tigers, thing, but that's the lesser play here in this whole story. So that's just kind of it's not even a red herring, but it's just because it does get brought up, but it's just, that's just secondary. Cause like the book doesn't even start. Well, I guess the book does start off with Cap, and his deal. So they're kind of pushing that in there.
Roddy, I was just looking at your notes, and I read this particular book on my way home today, so my recollection is fresh, but also, I've been trying to remember everything else I've read, and I may not remember all the details about this particular book, but I wanted you to start the conversation on Loki, Agent of Asgard, number 10, because I'm inclined, I understand one of the things that you're about to say.
Mm-hmm. This was a good book. Oh, this is the potential click of the week. Actually, I need to refresh my notes, and I didn't.
Well, yeah, exactly. Flip it open and see.
So it started out. If you hadn't read this book, this is post-Axis also, and just like Mighty Avengers, this has Loki having a nice little pity party with him and trying to get back to be friends with Verity, and then who happens to pop up? Thor. And they have a nice little brother. It was actually kind of touching, nice little heart-to-heart talk until
the one page, no pictures, all text.
Just comes out of the blue. This just goes, and then starts off this downward spiral of Loki going down this road. That
what was awesome about this, and this is why I was so happy to see that you thought so highly of this book, is that this got me up to speed on what's been happening in this book. I stopped reading this book. I stopped picking this up a long time ago. I sort of had an idea that what happened in this one page summary had been going on. I didn't quite understand it because of the fits and starts that I had in reading it. But this one page, summarized things so well, got me up to speed on what was happening and put me in a place where I understood what happened next.
Right.
I absolutely understood where Thor, Odin's son, was coming from.
Yeah, so they did a good job about pulling all that together. My questions started with, because I'm not familiar with how Kid Loki came into be, but I knew what happened to him to get from here from there to here, because that happened at the end of Young Avengers. And then he went straight into this book, or at least part of that. The part with the quote-unquote reverse Loki, which actually it is, if you look at it, it is actually the reverse Loki, but that was kind of dumb.
No, but that Eichel, that part, that story goes back to the very first appearance of Kid Loki.
Right.
Like, we're going back to, like, Siege. We're going back to, all that stuff.
Right. It's like Fear Itself and all in there somewhat. See, that part I hadn't read, so I was a little lost on that part. But, right, like, it did. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, that goes back a long way. That's the part. That's the part I remembered best. And then I lost track of how we got to mid-teen, you know, just past puberty Loki. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that part had to be filled in. And, you know, reading this one-page summary got me up to speed. And I was like, oh, so this is where we're going.
And it also ties in the whole old, you know, future Loki. Well, yes. It starts to tie in this whole future Loki, and actually in like the inversion Loki, and yes. And the inversion and the truth wave that happened in which that part I'm kind of I remember that happening in Latveria when he got trapped a couple of issues back before Axis started. So I remember most of that stuff. But it was still kind of hazy about. It's like, wait, that was a separate thing then.
Now tell me this. This What's is that? What my first and strongest reaction to this book is, and it's a positive, is that it made me want to go back and read the first. What is this? Issue 10. Mm-hmm. Read the first 9 issues to see where we had come from.
Okay.
And that's a good thing. I read this issue jumping in, basically, after knowing, you know, just bits and pieces of what was going on. It made me want to go back and read. That's a good thing. It made me look at it and say, hey, I want to see how we got to this point. So this is a powerful story right there.
Yeah, so it gave me a similar thing, except for it made me want to go back to the beginning of Kid Loki.
Oh, even further.
Yeah. Because like I said, I knew very little about that part. Like I knew it happened and I knew there was a thing around it happening. And I do remember reading, like I've been reading on this book the whole time. So I remember them keep bringing it up and I'm just like, okay, what's going on here? I must have missed something. But like I said, I remember what happened to get into this book with the Younger Visioner stuff.
Right.
That just so happened to kind of get, I don't know if that was tagged in or that was that was supposed to happen, but I do remember what got from here to there.
Right. So yeah, I actually forgotten about the Young Avengers stuff because I stopped reading that towards the end of that run. So, but like I said, it seems like you had a similar reaction to it. It made you want to go back and fill in some of those gaps so you could understand how we got to this point. It's a great book. I definitely have this as a contender for Click of the Week just because of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that and made me want to, you know, review what had happened.
Right. And if you enjoyed any interactions between Thor and Loki, like before now, like even I guess the inversion stuff too, even though that's just Thor acting crazy, you will probably enjoy this because, like, you get them talking about that kind of stuff. You get to see what happens after that one page that we're alluding to that we're not gonna spoil. Mm-hmm. That starts a whole chain of, you know, a problem. But at the end of the book, you will be like, I would like to believe you will be probably interested in what's going to happen next.
And what happened before.
Right. Because you kind of see Loki slightly different from, actually pretty different from what you've seen him in the past, even with this new iteration of him.
Right. And it's funny, one of the flashback panels, a couple of the flashback panels in the book show you, kind of clue you into how far back you have to go, Rod, with the costume that Thor is wearing.
Yeah.
So, as I was saying earlier, you know, you have to go back to, like, Siege, you know, even before that, like, the very first, like, the reappearance of Thor, like, the Coypel and Straczynski Thor, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, that's a long way back.
Yeah. To
really understand where we were coming from. So, I enjoyed this book. It was a great, great read. And I'm definitely on board with this being a Click of the Week candidate.
Which, my other question was, is this book ending? Or has this on the block or anything? Because I was kind of concerned about that.
I don't know.
Because it seemed like they were trying to get to a point, or they're going to get to a point that seems, I don't know if it's going to be final or not. Yeah.
That might have been in the plans from the beginning.
Yeah. So that was kind of wondering about. And if that is the case, then it's getting there in pretty good style, or it's starting to get there in pretty good style.
Yes, I agree. All right, let's see what else you guys read. Seems like Roddy and I were reading a lot of the same things because we were reading a lot of Marvel. Mm-hmm. Black Widow number 14. I know you've been reading this more consistently than I.
Yes.
I understand that Natasha. It's weird that they call her Romanova. I'm like, I always thought it was Romanov, but
they flip back and forth every now and then. Yeah, I guess they're going with this one with Romanova.
Okay, so. You know, was it you and Tim talking about the art, the Noto art?
Yes.
How he had adapted his style to a monthly book.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know,
be great.
Right, and I started to read this book with that in mind, and I agree, he's adapted to, you know, a simple line art that you know, lends itself to, you know, reproducible art that's, you know, he can do month in and month out and not have to worry about, you know, like that fine painting style that sometimes takes forever.
Yeah, he's found his point with that, because you can even tell from the cover to the inside, the inside stuff, while still detailed, is a little simpler than the work he puts in on the cover, but still, you know, still looks great. As for the story, though, so this is after the events of her lawyer being shot and this group that she's trying to find out called Chaos that's causing mass confusion for her life. She's finally starting to try to track them down after them tracking her down and messing with her for whatever odd reason. So she got this list last issue, I believe it was, and now she's going after the people on that list to try to get some dirt onto it.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, I don't know, I felt like while it was a good read, I felt like they kind of rushed it, or maybe that was the plan, because it went from her going one-to-one to just like, all right, let's just get everybody together and see what's going on here, and to which ends up going a whole different way for her.
What was interesting about this issue is that she almost makes an error in underestimating her opponents. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of interesting. That's not something you see every day from the Black Widow. And it was interesting to see the tide turn against her so quickly in the span of like two pages. All of a sudden, she is no longer on the offensive, but on the defensive.
Right.
And well, go on.
Well, the only thing I was about to say was that's the one thing you've kind of noticed within the whole of the series, is that along the way, she even said in the like the very beginning of like one or two, she's like, yeah, sometimes she makes mistakes. Like, she's not the perfect killer or the perfect spy. Like, she's not saying that, I'm paraphrasing, but she has made mistakes within from here to there, you know, along the way, but she has gotten her way out of it.
Right.
Up until now, but she has actually kind of underestimated things every now and then, which is good because it makes her human, and it finds her, you know, finds her getting ways to get out of it, or exactly, you know, finding ways to deal with things. What do you want to say?
I was just going to say, and this is another Edmondson book,
mm-hmm,
much like The Punisher, that reading the later issues has made me want to go back and get the first one. I said this, you know, I think in the last month's Black Widow, or maybe even 2 months ago, it made me want to start picking up the back issues because, you know, reading the latest story arc, you know, made me want to go back and catch up. So, you know, I give Edmondson a lot of credit for writing a book that's engaging and makes me want to catch up on it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
All right, let's see. We in rapid fire review time. It's getting late, fellas.
I want to hear about Millennium, Doug.
Okay. Talk about that.
Is that the Fox Millennium Show?
Remix.
Yes, it is. That made me that gave me pause. I was like, ooh, I don't remember this. I may not want to read this right away. Tell us about it.
All right, so the show was originally developed to be a companion show to X-Files.
Right.
But it was originally developed not to be in the same universe. It wasn't a spinoff. It was more of the way that X-Files would look at government conspiracies and UFO cover-ups and Bigfoot and that type of stuff and take it seriously. This looked at apocalypse predictions and religious visions and things like that, and it took that seriously. So the example I always try to use is that if, you know, X-Files was Fringe, then Millennium was The Exorcist. And that kind of gives you an idea of how universes were different. And what they've done with this comic series is they've made it the same universe. And they did this because after Millennium went off the air, they did an episode of The X-Files where they had the character Frank Black, who's the star of Millennium, mm-hmm, appeared in an X-Files episode. And it was just kind of like a wink and a nod to the Millennium series. It wasn't really rooted in the Millennium mythology. It didn't really have any of the other characters or any of the other themes that you got from Millennium. It was more or less, they did a New Year's episode for, you know, the year 2000. They had Mulder and Scully finally got their first kiss on screen, and you know, it was more about just being some kind of an event show. And people like myself who really enjoyed both series saw it more as, you know, how you can have Superman or Batman appear in like 20 different movies and TV shows, but it's not really the same character, you know. Like you just had Smallville a couple years ago had Flash and Green Arrow in it, but it's not Flash and Arrow that are on TV now, you know. It was that idea where they had the character appear on X-Files, but it wasn't really the same guy, it wasn't really the same theme, but it was just kind of, you know, your wink back at that series. Well, this series continues on with that appearance in X-Files, which kind of kills the momentum a little bit, kind of kills the spirit of it. And it makes it an X-Files spinoff. Fox Mulder from X-Files is all over this issue. And in fact, it becomes more of a Fox Mulder story where Frank Black from a Millennium appears kind of here and there to kind of give him hints and clues and point him in the right direction. But it doesn't stand as a Frank Black story, which is, you know, disappointing. And my hope is that they're only doing that to try to push for readers who buy X-Files to go ahead and pick this book up, and then once it can, you know, establish a reader base, then it can kind of go out on its own and do its own thing. Mm-hmm. But it's just kind of disappointing that that's what they did for this first issue. I love the character. I love the series. The fact that they're doing this makes me excited. You know, I bought it. I'm going to buy it. You know, anything that comes out with the Millennium name on it, I'm going to pick it up. But just overall, it was kind of disappointing that that's the route that they chose to go with this, even though the TV show made it clear at several points that these were different characters, different universes, different themes.
Mm.
But similar, but not necessarily a spinoff.
Well, you can see from the cover, Dirt, and it was the cover that clued me into what it was. Because I'd never watched the show and was only vaguely on my radar. So when I opened up the cover, when I turned to the cover and I saw who was on the cover, I was immediately taken back to, like, you know, TV commercials, Fox commercials for the show, and thinking, oh, that's what this is. And it's obviously geared towards people who are fans of the X-Files and you know, at least getting them to pick up this book and open it up and hopefully getting them to buy it.
Well, and I understand that, like, that's a marketing thing. Like, right. You kind of have to do that. But X-Files was the sci-fi show with a little bit of comedy in it, whereas mm-hmm. Millennium was the horror show that was dark and intense. And, you know, the original pilot episode for Millennium, when they showed it to the Fox executives, they even questioned whether or not they could show it on TV because it was so dark and disturbing. And, you know, a lot of the executives were really kind of upset by it, in the same way that I use that example of The Exorcist, the way The Exorcist really upset people, you know, in the 70s when that came out. It was very dark. And very intense, and very, there's even a point where they're, you know, talking about conspiracies and whether or not governments can be involved in this type of stuff. And one of the characters makes a comment that, you know, could you, if there really is a conspiracy with the government, could you even imagine how people would freak out, considering how many people believe in that garbage, like UFOs or abducting people and experimenting on them? So they even make a comment in the series that the stuff that's happening in X-Files obviously isn't happening in this world. You know, none of the stuff that we see in the X-Files of the big grand conspiracy of the X-Files of the government working with aliens to abduct humans and make these alien hybrids and all of that kind of stuff that was the backbone of that series has absolutely nothing to do with the universe in which Millennium is. So the fact that they use that, I understand it's, you know, you got to do it for the marketing thing because there's an audience there and you want the audience to pick it up, but it is a different universe. It is a different feel. It's a different, you know, setup. And so it's just kind of disappointing that they decided to go that way. But like I said, I hope that they're able to establish a reader base and then they can move out on their own. Right now, IDW, they are committed to doing 5 issues. Like, it's slated as an ongoing, but they're committed to doing the 5 issues. And then depending on how those 5 issues sell is whether or not they continue on with 679.
Gotcha.
So I guess this opening arc of 5 issues really has to, you know, grab those readers.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So they're tying them in with that.
Gotcha. All right.
So you think, are they're not really, does it seem like they're not really going for fans of the show per se, because I mean, they might hope to catch a few, but they're trying to catch more people that's into, say, Torchwood, Doctor Who type of with this book.
Well, I don't know as far as Doctor Who references, because I don't follow Doctor Who.
Sure.
But the one thing, when the show first hit the airwaves, it was how Law and Order always has the crime of the week. You always have that one murder or that one bank robbery or whatever they're trying to solve, you know, on that week's episode. And Millennium originally was centered around serial killers. This guy was a behavioral profiler. And he worked for the FBI, so it started out as the serial killer of the week show. So he is tracking a serial killer, and it happens to be the serial killer that Mulder did his research on when he, you know, was in the academy of the FBI. So that's how they tie the two books together, is based on that serial killer idea. And the X-Files, it was more sci-fi, but they did do those darker episodes and those darker moments, so they are kind of trying to tie in with that. So I can see how they, from a executive standpoint, from a guy, you know, in an office trying to put this together, says, okay, well, that's going to be where we draw the people in, is we're going to have this X-Files link, and people who read X-Files will get them to read Millennium, and people who like that, you know, that serial killer detective type thing is how you pull them in. But the problem is that almost takes the series back to step one, as opposed to going back to where the series ended and then projecting 15 years out and seeing where would the characters be. You know, it takes it back to that point of where the series originally sprouted from and kind of building off of that theme, which, you know, I want to know where the characters are now in relation to where they left off in the series, not go back to those original season one, you know, themes. But again, it's an executive in an office trying to sell more comics as opposed to telling the best story they possibly can, you know.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
But right. I did read another small press book that I really enjoyed.
What was that?
And that is a book called
Future Proof.
Yep. If I can find the cover here. There it is. Future Proof is basically two guys traveling through time, getting involved in every conspiracy, every cover-up, every hidden government agenda in order to manipulate future events. And you don't know what the future events are that they're manipulating. You don't really understand why these things have to happen. And these guys don't either. They are just soldiers of this, you know, time-traveling team. And they just get their assignments, and they go and they do them. The first issue was about the JFK assassination and how it had to happen. He had to die for whatever reason. So people who try to travel back in time to stop the assassination, they have to stop those people from stopping it, so it does happen. The second one was based on the Philadelphia experiment, the supposed time travel and teleportation of the battle cruiser in World War II. You know, they get involved in that situation. And then in the third one, if you follow your conspiracies, the third one is the trading of Babe Ruth. Now, I'm not a big sports guy. I don't, you know, Babe Ruth was traded at some point in his career.
The Boston Red Sox to the New York Yankees.
Yeah, and apparently he was traded for cash.
Pretty much.
Instead of for another player.
Correct.
Which was highly unusual at the time. And the excuse was the guy needed money for
start
a Broadway play.
Exactly.
Yeah. So this apparently is a conspiracy among sports fans for a long time of why would they do this trade. And so they get involved in making this trade happen. These are the guys that they started the machinations of what led to Babe Ruth being traded, and this is the grand conspiracy. And for me, it was just so amusing. The first one is JFK, one of the biggest conspiracies of all time. Then you have the Philadelphia experiment, which is not as well known, but it is deeply woven into so many aspects of World War II and Einstein and all of the German scientists that were recruited by the CIA to leave Nazi Germany and work for the United States. So there's a lot of deep conspiracy and whatever built around that. And then Babe Ruth, like the trading of Babe Ruth. It just seems like a ludicrous thing, but if you're talking about conspiracies, I mean, conspiracies are ludicrous on the surface anyway, so why not, why not have a conspiracy about Babe Ruth being traded? And I actually enjoyed the story so much that when I was done, I actually jumped on Wikipedia and started looking at Babe Ruth and looking at the trade and looked at all the details to it. Like, there is a conspiracy there. I mean, there is something...
What is this dirt talking about sports?
Yeah, I know. It's money. A baseball thing, right? Crazy.
Wow.
But it really has been, for a book that came out of nowhere, this is from a publisher called Bliss on Tap Publishing. This is a bi-monthly book, so it only comes out every other month. This is just a really well-written, well-crafted story. The characters, they banter, you know, a lot back and forth, because these are two guys who have worked together for a long time. They've been recruited into this program. They're basically, you know, set free to jump between these different time periods to do these different missions. And, you know, they're just kind of, however they think of to get the job done is how it gets done. You know, it's just, this is your mission. This has to get done. Go do it. Almost like a quantum leap, you know, type of thing.
Right.
It's just so enjoyable to see these characters, the way they interact, the way they try to figure out how they're going to make these things happen. And then to see these, you know, really ludicrous conspiracies be drawn together. And what they've tried to craft here is that these guys are on one side going through time manipulating, but then there are other people going through time trying to manipulate against these things. So you see, for instance, in the JFK assassination, if you've ever seen the Zapruder film, there's a guy with an umbrella. He's dressed in a black raincoat with a black umbrella, and he's waving it in the air as JFK goes by right before he gets shot. And that, they've turned him into a character. Like, he's one of the guys who reappears at different points in time. And it's just kind of fun stuff, the way they're building upon these conspiracies. I've just found this book to be a lot more enjoying than I ever expected. And, you know, the fact that I am going on Wikipedia and looking at Babe Ruth tells you that there's something more going on to this book that I really enjoy.
That's cool.
I'm intrigued. Cool.
Although the cover makes me think of the movie Sandlot, but that's another story, you know? You know, with the signed Babe Ruth ball. But that's cool. You know, it's not a book that I would even have seen on the shelves, so I'm glad that you bring it up.
Yeah, well, luckily, you know, the owner of the store where I work is open to, if there's a small press book that comes out, we'll at least order a couple copies for the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if it's nobody company you've never heard of, it's their first book they've ever put out, we'll order, you know, two of them just to throw them on the shelf just to have them. You know, and so that's how a lot of this stuff kind of lands in front of me, is that we just open the box and, you know, what is this book? I've heard of this. Yeah. So I might as well, you know, sit down and give it a shot. So,
interesting.
Future Proof is definitely a book that I liked.
Interesting. Cool. Let's see. Is there anything else that you read that I might have read? Futures End. You want to talk about Futures End real quick?
Not really.
Okay, good.
Batman good. Beyond from the future, or Bruce Wayne from the future of Batman Beyond has made his way to the time period of Future's End to follow Lord up with Batman Beyond.
God.
So, there you go.
Whatever. Yeah. You know, jeez.
This was just one of those issues where not really a whole lot of note happened. It was a lot of action that followed up the previous issue, but not a lot of exposition.
Wow, I think we already covered all of Roddy's books too. So let me start off rapid fire, because I read a lot of Marvel this week. Just a few words, and I'm very surprised. I guess we're out of deference to Tim not finishing Amazing Spider-Man number 13 this week.
I actually finished it while y'all were talking.
Nice. So I can talk about it, but I don't know if you had a chance to read. Obviously, you did, since you've put down what you've read on your list. You have not had a chance to read all the tie-in Spider-Verse books.
No. But
this week's worth of Spider-Verse books are pretty good. Read them all. It's actually worth the read. That's my rapid fire review on all, you know, like as a whole, the Spider-Verse books this week were very, very good. They moved at a very good pace. There was a lot of great one-liners in each of the books, and, you know, the action is at least moving forward now. We have some pushback from the spiders against the inheritors. You know, each aspect of the battle against the inheritors is explored in the various tie-ins. I think you can still get away with reading Amazing Spider-Man just to get the main story. You will be missing out on, you know, very, very small parts, but I think still very interesting and well-written parts in some of the tie-in books, more so in the, let's see, where's the list? What I found, it the better tie-in book was was it Team Up or no? Actually, I think Scarlet Spider. Believe it or not, Scarlet Spider. That was probably the better of the three, and then you have Spider-Verse Team Up and Spider-Woman kind of competing as a equal on equal footing. But I think the Scarlet Spider one was pretty good. Again, very quickly, Bucky Barnes, The Winter Soldier number 4. I'm going to take us all the way back to the beginning of the show when we're talking, or maybe towards the beginning of the show when, Tim, you had that question from Adam Black about what we would change in the wake of Secret War.
Yes.
I would change Bucky Barnes, The Winter Soldier, and take him back from this crazy space-faring adventure and put him firmly back on Terra Firma, because I am not a fan of this book. This is on the chopping block of my personal list.
I gave the first, this is issue 4, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I gave the first 3 issues, well, 2, and I skimmed through the 3rd issue.
Mm-hmm.
But I already knew I probably wasn't going to like it anyway, just because it's Alex Cott, and he's a great writer, but his writing just isn't for me.
It's just not, I'm not happy with it right now. It's just, it's not what I think a Bucky Barnes Winter Soldier story should be, and that's probably why they're doing it, because they want to turn expectations on their ear. But, I, you know, like I said, it's on the chopping block for me. I don't know if I'm even going to make it to issue number 5 in my physical pull list. Very quickly, I know people were fans of All New X-Factor. It is ending with this week's issue number 20. It was a pretty good wrap up to the story. It does not wrap up things neatly. There are multiple threads here that are left dangling, that Peter David leaves dangling in anticipation of these stories probably being continued in a new book that Peter David's going to launch at some point in the near future. So don't think of this as an ending. It's just this particular volume of X-Factor coming to a close.
It's not coming.
Well, yeah, maybe not All New X-Factor, but these stories are going to be...
Oh, in his Spider-Man book, maybe?
Possibly. That's definitely... You've already hit on a definite possibility. Fantastic Four, we jump to the original numbering. We are up to 640, issue 642. We are rapidly coming to the end of this run of Fantastic Four. This issue involves a lot of explanation with regards to why things have been happening. That's been like the ongoing direction of the book for the last 2 issues, where the big bad has been revealed. But this issue shows a possible solution to everything. Basically, all this stuff is happening because, you know, someone has tapped into Franklin Richards's psyche, and the Heroes Reborn world has come out and it's trying to come out and play. And that's really the gist of the story. And, you know, we have the reappearance of a 90s character in this issue. I don't want to completely spoil it, because I know that he's on the cover of the next issue if you look at the solicits, but I won't bring it up in the show. But, you know, it's kind of an all 90s everything, you know, jam that Leonard Kirk and James Robinson are putting together. So,
Impossible Man?
No. But it's a 90s character. It's definitely a 90s character. He had his own series. Let's see. Where else am I going? We hit that. Superior Iron Man number 4. It was an interesting wrap-up to the Daredevil arc. We don't leave the two don't leave on the best of terms. I don't want to spoil it any more than that, but not that much happens in this issue. I don't know if this is going to stay on my physical pull list for much longer. I do still enjoy reading Jerkface Tony Stark, but I guess the next issue will kind of tell where we're going, because the next issue, no real spoiler here, we're going to explore the origin of Teen Abomination, as silly as that sounds.
That actually sounds
interesting. Good.
Yeah.
It's Teen Abomination.
I say that because I read a Tom Taylor interview today on CBR where he was talking about it.
All right. I haven't read that, but you know, that doesn't really interest me. But I think I'll give that issue a shot to see if I'm going to stay with the title. Rocket Raccoon number 7 plays with something that was on display in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. and we have, you know, a nice little start to a story. It's a good jumping on point for readers. I'm not going to say too much because it's definitely it would definitely be full of spoilers, but it's a good jumping on point for anyone that's looking to catch up with what Rocket and Groot are up to. Let's see. I think that's about it for rapid fire reviews on my part. I definitely wanted to cover the Spider-Verse books because we hadn't touched on them at all. And I, you know, as a whole, I would take them as a whole. They're actually candidates for my click or parentheses clicks of the week. But I'm still thinking about it as we speak.
Hmm.
Yeah. Look, I covered all that stuff.
So, clicks of the week.
I'm going to go with Roddy's suggestion.
Yeah, and I'm going to keep Loki, Agent of Asgard, number 10.
Second. I second that.
I'm glad y'all liked it.
It was good. It was really good.
Yeah. Like I said, you know, I can't say it enough. If a book is going to make me stop and go back and check out what happened to see how we got here, that's a good. It's a good story.
As much as I was hoping my pick would be Millennium this week, considering how much of a fan of the show I was, I'm actually going to go with Future Proof, just because if a book is a good enough story that it makes me want to Wikipedia baseball facts, then there's got to be something to it.
There you go.
Mine would be, as much as I complained about the Planet of Symbiotes, I probably would still pick Guardians of the Galaxy. Now that I think about it. Good That's art gets funny. Me. And Shitty's art was pretty good in it. Plus, we got a new Venom, sort of, kinda.
It was funny.
How do you pronounce that artist's name?
It might be Skeety.
Skeety. Let's go with Skeety.
Yeah,
or let's Skeety go with like Skeety. Ellie.
Yeah. Come on, man. We're not building a wall against Mongolians. We're not building a wall against Mongolians, man. I gotta love it. I can drop an old South Park reference. That's funny. Well, last before we wrap up the show, I wanted to show one thing I acquired last week at not quite my local comic shop, but I was happy to see the electronic Dancing Groot. And this thing is awesome. It brings a smile to my face every time I activate it. Dirt, have you gotten these in your shop?
No, we've only gotten the Funko Pop Vinyl.
Oh, you mean
Groot,
this one?
Baby Groot.
I got that, too. I got that, too. So here is Funko Baby Groot. Yeah, this is actually pretty cool. Let me see if I can turn the damn thing so it's on the...
There you go.
So, yeah, see, there you go. Right, there he goes. But this one, the electronic one, is freaking awesome. I'm going to turn it on. I have to warn you, though, I thought about bringing this and keeping this in my office because I definitely need something to make me smile as I'm working on, like, legal briefs and crap like that. But it is on the loud side. But surprisingly enough, it has a license to play I Want You Back. The license, the legal, you know, the legal language is on the label itself, so...
That's great, because this video doesn't, so...
Exactly. Without further ado... And it just goes. And it's actually a pretty long, you know, clip.
I want this now. How much does that cost?
$1,000.
No, I really, like, was not paying any attention when I saw it advertised, but now I was actually
it's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
And the best part is, if you watch, if I make noise, it moves. And if you play your own music, it'll dance to that as well. Nice. It's pretty cool. You see, it's not playing the music, but it's still moving because it hears me talking. Right. To me, the best selling point, I went to one of the branches of Midtown Comics to get this, and because I didn't realize it was coming out, and I didn't order it through my local comic shop. So when I walked in, I saw it, I grabbed it. Oh, by the way, when I went to try to get Jason Aaron and John Cassidy's autographs, and they closed the line because it was like around two blocks in Lower Manhattan, this is when I picked that up. I wasn't, you know, last week I mentioned I was going to try to go to that signing. No luck. because they'd capped the line. I couldn't get out of work fast enough to get to it. So while I was there, I picked this up, and I couldn't be more happy with my purchase. It was it's Manhattan prices, so it was a little bit over $20. I think it was like 21, but I think you can get it online for cheaper. But
is he spasming over there?
Yeah, because it moves when I talk. It reacts to sound.
Oh, the only thing
that's what I've been trying to say. Like, it hears me talk, and if I play music, it'll do the same thing.
Now the LeGrand and the whirring noise doesn't happen, or maybe it's drowned out by the music, and that's why it's so loud.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So that could get a little.
Right. It's definitely drowned out by the music.
Yeah, that would explain why it's so loud. So
exactly. So, but I'm definitely enjoying this this particular purchase. It makes me smile every time I see it.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to share that with you guys. I'm glad that we could share that on this week's episode of the Comic Book Chronicles. Now it's turning off because that is loud. It is very loud. The music. I was shocked. I think I turned it on in the shop. I was like, "Turn it off!"
Nice.
Oh, there you go, fellas. Here we go. Oh, one other quick announcement on my part. I got to pull up the link. I got to pull up the page because I saw it flash on my feed. Special edition NYC. The Reed Pop Show, the people who put on New York Comic Con, had announced the 2015 dates for this year. I want to say it's definitely in June. Let me pull up the actual...
June 6th and 7th, 2015.
Yes, thank you very much. It's been they have confirmed their dates. They have changed locations. They are not going to be at Javits this year. That is unfortunate, but they are going to be in Pier 94 in New York City. That is on the west side of New York, for anyone that doesn't know. I'm disappointed that they're not going to be at Javits in the where they normally have Artist Alley, but I'm very glad that they're still going to be having Special Edition NYC. They have not announced any guests, but... if anyone recalls, this is a great one of the opportunities they present for attending Special Edition NYC is the opportunity to purchase tickets for New York Comic Con. So for no other reason, I'm going to be going to Special Edition NYC to make sure I get my New York Comic Con tickets. But I had a good time last year. I hope it's going to be as good this year in a different venue. Look at that. We already started in January. We already started talking about our con schedule.
Oh, man. Yeah. Already got part of it ready.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to one next month.
What's next month?
Middle Georgia Comic Con.
Ah. Anyone on the guest list there?
Yeah. Without looking it up off the top of my head, Van Jensen, Robert Venditti, Nathan Edmondson, I think, is going to be there.
Nice.
Those all guys that live in Georgia.
Yeah, I'm about to say.
I need to see if Mac Wilson is going to be there. I know he lives in Georgia, too. I don't think I saw his name on the list. Those are the big ones, Edmondson and the Green Lantern fellas.
Oh, very cool, very cool. I'm glad that we're getting our con schedules together and rolling. I see that Edmondson, Tony Harris, Philip Hester.
Yeah. It'll be very small, but should be
Paul fun. Jenkins will be there.
Oh, did you just look it up?
Yeah, I'm scrolling through it right now. Joe Lindner, Laura Martin,
yeah,
John McCray. Wow, that's actually pretty cool for what sounds to me like a very local show, but they're gonna have a pretty good guest list.
We'll see how many of those actually show up.
Babs Tarr, Wilfredo Torres.
Yeah, Babs Tarr surprised me.
Daniel Way. I don't know if you have any issues of Wolverine Origins to have him sign. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. All right.
Cool beans.
Do the ending here. I want to thank everyone for tuning into tonight's show. We're being live on tape delay. Reminder to follow us on our individual Twitter accounts at TimDogg98 and at TheClickNation. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need.
Yep.
Dirt is at PCN_Dirt. And his website is popculturenetwork.com. And the man behind the sound effects is at agent_70.
And I promise Serapina78 on Twitter that at some point we will talk about Jem and the Holograms, the comic book.
Cool. So with that, we bid you adieu. We are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Hey!
What's on your